Hey, Bay, good to have you back. Good afternoon.
Hi, Drew. Thanks for having me.
This is really a fascinating case that's being proposed. I never thought of the plaintiff always winning. So let's start with this. I know you've been fighting for this for a long time. Over the years, you've been on my radio program. We've been talking about other cases, your own situation, amongst others. Has anyone ever challenged no-fault divorce on these grounds, on constitutional grounds, before even challenging the state constitutional grounds? I think it's very clever. What's the likelihood that there'll be success, and what's the history?
Well, for someone to answer your question about has this particular challenge ever been made, it would require a lot of research. And I'm more of a communications person on this issue, where I'm telling everybody what's going on. This guy, Ryan, contacted me because he found Mary's Advocate's website, where I had put together about a year and a half ago a sample that someone might try to argue that no-fault divorce was unconstitutional. And I was intertwining things having to do with the Catholic perspective, because we have our catechism and the Catholic Code of Canon Law, and I was trying to intertwine religious liberties with some things about constitutional protections for rights anyway. Ryan found Mary's Advocate's information. He was not married in a Catholic ceremony. His wife and he are Bible, well, at least they were, to his knowledge, Bible-believing Christians. And offhand, I don't even remember what religious affiliation he is, but he's definitely a Christian. He's very Christ-centered, and he is just trusting that God's going to lead him where he needs to go. And there's a whole network of what I call, some of them are lawyers, some of them are self-studied researchers. And this concept that Ryan is using, I've never heard of it being used anywhere else, because it's so simple. It's like, oh my gosh, how could nobody have caught this before? But I know at least a couple of lawyers that have looked at this strategy and said, yeah, it looks good. Neither of them happen to be in Pennsylvania, where Ryan is, so he's still trying to find a Pennsylvania lawyer to push the issue forward.
Right. So what is it about the process? What is the process that Ryan says violates the Constitution?
Well, there's a couple. One is, just because legislatures make a law doesn't mean the law is legal. That makes sense, right? And in divorce proceedings, the Constitution of Pennsylvania, as well as the Constitution of lots of states, say that the divorce proceeding has to be a judicial process. And if you know your three branches of government, some things are administrative, or some things are police powers. For something to be judicial, the judge has to make a judgment about something. They have to make a law about something in particular. Someone accuses the other one of doing something, violating that law. And then there's a defendant who has to be able to be told, what did you do that violates something? What did you do that you're not allowed to do?
Right.
And you may or may not be guilty of whatever that was. That's kind of how lawsuits start. And if for something to be a judicial proceeding, it has to have that piece where the defendant is advised. There's this principle of due process rights in the federal Constitution. If you don't have your due process rights protected, the laws and the judicial process have gone afoul, is what I described in the article. So are you with me so far?
I am following you. No, I got you.
Okay. So what happens in no fault, and this is particularly unilateral no fault, which is the part that I'm interested in, where one party comes forward and says, I want a divorce, and different states have different vocabulary. In Pennsylvania, I think it's one party saying the marriage is irretrievably broken. I'm having to flip through stuff here. If one party says that, then there's Supreme Court cases in Pennsylvania that say if one party says that, then they absolutely have grounds for divorce. And the problem is the defendant's never been advised of what lawful obligation did he fail to uphold.
Okay.
That's kind of what it hinges. That's one of the things that it hinges on.
Let's take it outside the law for just a minute, and I'll take a few calls. If you're going through this, if you've got a question or comment, you can join us, 888-914-9149. Feel free to get in. Let's just take a couple where, whether it's Ryan or you or anyone else, the person wants out of the marriage, you know, and they're not, let's say they're not Catholic, they don't understand the sacramentality of it, they don't need annulments. Let's just say they want out. Why should they be forced to stay in a relationship that makes them miserable and unhappy and is not fulfilling to them just because the other spouse does. I mean, isn't that kind of the argument here? And if somebody says, hey, look, I went out, like if I had a contract with somebody else, I had a business partner, and the business was, you know, the guy was just in, and he was driving me crazy, and I wanted out, I could legally get out of that contract. You can break it, you can renegotiate it, you can do all sorts of things. What, you know, explain that aspect. There's probably a lot of people listening, Bay, and I'm being a little bit of a devil's advocate here.
I appreciate it. Here's the difference.
Yeah, go ahead.
In divorce court, what absolutely, literally happens is the plaintiff says to the court, I want you to order something with our children, and I want you to order something with our property, and many, many divorces, and Ryan is one of these where he makes a lot more money than his wife. They've got small kids. She is demanding that he be ordered by the court to pay her money, to live separated from him, and take her children from him. So we have some rights that are so fundamental that the state legislators can't go impairing on those willy-nilly. So when a court goes and says, I'm going to take your children away from you, I'm going to take your property away from you, I'm going to garnish your wages for a long time, that kind of stuff is the legislators giving to the court power to take things that are people's fundamental rights. And they just can't do that willy-nilly. So this is a little different than someone saying, I don't want to be your best friend anymore.
Yeah.
Now, if his wife had just left, and that would be terribly sad, and not taken the children, and not demanded they split the property, that would be different. So this is where there's limits to what the legislators can do and what the courts can do.
Right. So let's take Ryan's case, or your case. I know you want to reconcile with your husband, and I think it's both very noble and I think it's heroic, because I know that you and your husband entered into a sacramental marriage, and you really believe that is indeed the case. So even though you've been, I'm assuming, separated since 2004, maybe before then, you have been faithful to the vows of that sacrament. And I think that is something that really needs to be upheld. And you're going through all this in an effort also, right, to maybe one day reconcile with your spouse, even though he has legally gone ahead and divorced you?
Yeah, there's a number of people, we call ourselves standers,
okay,
where we stand for marriage, we're upholding marriage, we're defending marriage, and, you know, marriage is being attacked in the civil forum, and then people who abandon marriage when you've not done anything bad enough to justify separation. You know, if I was adulterer, or I was a, you know, crazed psychopath, right, you know, going after my children or my husband with, you know, frying pans or axes or whatever, fine, my husband would have a legitimate reason to be separated from me. But those of us who didn't do any of those kind of things, who believe that we're truly married and marriage was not invented by the state and marriage was something that was ordained by God and it existed even before Jesus was here.
All right, my guest today.
So and Ryan's position is that he's married.
Yeah.
And he's just kind of navigating through as best he can what's going on in the court process.
Yeah.
And anyone who's been through it, they feel the injustice because you go to these court proceedings and it's expected that you shall come up with a plan on how to split your kids in two. Well, what if you don't want to split your kids in two and you never gave the government authority over your children?
You bring up a great point, though. I mean, I never heard of a case where the plaintiff always wins, always wins. What are legal experts saying to you about the chance of this being a successful approach to protecting his marriage?
You're giving me more credit than I have. It's not like I've got 15 lawyers that call me on the phone that I can call on the phone and get an answer. And even some of the ones I do talk to are wanting to stay below the radar because they're like not in state and they're not hired as a consultant.
Gotcha.
I
guess my question, broad brush, is do you think this is going to be a successful approach?
Well, do I think it is? Yeah. I think it has a chance.
Okay.
Anybody who wants to read the motion for summary judgment that Ryan submitted to the court, it's available on Mary's Advocates. It's the top story right now on Mary's Advocates' website about the Pennsylvania man, Ryan. And you can read the gist of what he's talking about is these judges are sort of faking that they're doing judicial proceedings because really they're not. They're just coercing people. And there's really no basis to start an action if constitutional due process rights say, you don't even have a right to bring an action to a court to ask for a judgment unless you've experienced some harm done to you by the defendant.
Yeah.
And a no-fault divorce, you know, you could be St. Joseph.
Yeah.
And a plaintiff can come and say, hey, I want money and property and children, and I file an action against you.
That's awesome. Well, I'll tell you what, let me do this, okay? I'm going to open the phones for you. If you want to join us, maybe you're going through this right now. Maybe you want to stay in your marriage. Maybe your partner wants out, you know, your spouse wants out. Maybe you're frustrated. You can join us right now, 888-914-9149, 888-914-9149. Feel free to share your story, ask your questions. I only have Babe McFarland just probably for a few more minutes here. Let's go to the phones. We'll start down south in Austin, Texas. Jacob, good afternoon.
Hey, Drew, how you doing?
Great. Thank you for calling, Jacob.
No problem at all. The comment I was going to make, she actually brought up the sacrament of marriage, it predates the Catholic Church even. I mean, it's with Adam and Eve. I mean, it's the beginning of creation of humankind. And I was just wondering, I know probably within canon law and what the church says, the state shouldn't have much say over anything within marital relations. But I was just wondering, since we're Catholics, my opinion of divorce and whatnot, I mean, my family has divorces, and thankfully my wife and I will hopefully never experience that. But what's it even, why should we worry as Catholics, if we're faithful Catholics, and we're not going to be divorced because we know there's no such thing as divorce. You can't separate the husband and wife, you know, once they're validly sacramentally married. I mean, I understand for non-Catholics, you know, divorce can be a terrible thing, but for faithful Catholics, I understand divorce laws are, you know, they're pretty bad right now, but shouldn't we focus more on marriage prep and catechesis, this sort of thing, instead of, you know, looking to the state to solve our religious problem?
All right. Hey, great question, Jacob. I'll let Bay respond to it.
Yeah, Jacob, a lot of what Mary's Advocates publicizes is the Catholic Church teaching, catechism, and canon law on marriage and separation and divorce. I've uncovered a bunch of stuff that people have, for whatever reason, been ignoring. And back even before the Council of Trent in 1563, the Catholic Church has never said that your fellow residents of wherever you happen to live, or the monarch of your country, wherever you happen to live if you're in a monarchy, have competence to decide cases of separation of spouses. And for Catholics, a civil divorce is just making kind of a public record in the public forum that the spouses are separated, because like you said, Catholics don't recognize divorce. The problem comes in is when the civil divorce courts purport to have authority to relieve a Catholic of the part of our marriage contract and covenant to live together. When you marry as a Catholic, you are understanding that that person is promising to work with you to uphold a common marital household and support each other in that, both materially, financially, spiritually, whatever, as also children. For Catholics, if you marry with a Catholic understanding of marriage, you are not even willing to conceive and start new children in this God's universe unless the other person and you have an agreement that you both and I, let's put it first person, I would not agree to start a family with my husband unless it was understood I am going to be participating in raising those children every day.
Yeah.
So what no-fault divorce does is the government comes in, which is basically your fellow residents of your state through the power of the states and courts.
Sure.
They take children away from a parent who doesn't want to lose their children, who wants their family intact. And a lot of times, like Ryan, if you're the higher income earning parent, they're going to take your property too. So if Catholics were all following our catechism and canon law, no Catholic would ever file for divorce without going through an ecclesiastic process first about separation.
Yeah, when it comes to divorce, it makes me think of what the Gospels say. And Jesus made it clear in the Gospels that divorce is not part of God's plan, right? When the Pharisees asked him about divorce, he asked them what Moses allowed. And they said, well, he allowed the, you know, the writing of a bill of divorce, but Jesus didn't settle with Moses. I mean, he went back further to creation, basically saying to the Pharisees, hey, have you not read that he who made them from the beginning made them male and female? And for this reason, A man shall leave his father and mother and be joined to his wife, and the two shall become one. So they're no longer two, but one. And what therefore God has joined together, let no man put asunder. And the Lord went even further. He went on to say, he said, Moses allowed divorce because of the hardness of heart. And that to me is such a strong indictment. But that is the teaching of the Son of God. And I think today you're right, Bay. I think we become too litigious. People don't look at what happens in that sacrament, and they're willing to throw that apart. We'll sneak a quick call because I have a few moments left. Julie is listening in Portland, Maine. Hi, Julie.
Hi there. Thanks for talking about this issue. And, you know, I just wanted to mention your other caller had said maybe focus on the marriage prep, you know, and that type of thing before people actually get married. And I'd have to second that. You know, I'm a divorced Catholic. I have three kids. I'm thankfully annulled, which, you know, may perhaps make me sacramentally whole, but it doesn't solve, you know, the kids issue and spending time with both parents and all that. And I'm here to tell you right now, and I guarantee you there is someone listening right now who's engaged, who's having doubts. And I was one of those people when I got married, I was like, this is not right. This is wrong. This is not the right person. This is not the right circumstance. This shouldn't be happening. And I went through it anyway, and then found myself in the mess of divorce and annulment, having kids have to go through that. Mm-hmm. And luckily it was mostly friendly. Luckily we live down the street from each other. The kids see everybody all the time, but it's not ideal and they don't like it. And I just, for the person out there right now who's listening, who's engaged and thinking, oh my God, this is, you know what I mean? Like, I think it's a mistake or I'm not doing it. I don't care what reason you have in your head, yep, thinking your family wants you to go through with it, or there's all sorts of reasons people get married. Don't do it.
Well said. Hey,
you know, just unless you know it's right, and because you're going to find yourself in this situation, and it's really hard on everybody.
Julie, I'm sorry for what you went through, but thank you for calling and sharing that. Bay, I only have about a moment left, so I'm going to let you respond to her and let people know how they can get connected to you, okay?
Sure. Julie, one of the things that Mary's Advocates is trying to do is have people recognize going into marriage, if they're marrying as the Catholic Church understands marriage, and then if there is a need for a separation, have the Catholic understanding of separation kick in. Because, like, say if there's a husband or a man who never intends to be sexually faithful, well, he's lying when he gets married and says he intends to be sexually faithful. So why should he get the same treatment when it comes time to decide what happens in separation as the man like Ryan who wants to keep his family together and the wife abandons? Now, I don't know if that's going to happen in, you know, the next many years or so, but it's something we're pushing.
All right. Well, you check out Mary'sAdvocates.org. Mary'sAdvocates.org. That's plural. You can get all the information on Bay and, of course, all that she is there defending. When I return, nearly 4 years after the Supreme Court made same-sex marriage legal throughout our country, lawmakers in Tennessee, are attempting to turn back the clock. Wait till you hear what they have in mind.